A lot of people on this podcast talk about their points, and they make three different points for 2 minutes each. And what I decided to do in talking about Jewish comedy was do something slightly different, which was to make twice as many points, taking half the amount of time. So 6 points, because there are really, I think, 6 kinds of Jewish comedy. The first is Jewish humor comes as a response to persecution. One of the ways of dealing with trauma is to make a joke about it. You can cope with it. You can feel better about it. So that's one kind of Jewish comedy is a response to persecution, trauma, and to anti-Semitism. Another way of thinking about it is Jewish comedy as social and political satire. Jews have had social, political, and religious institutions. Mock them and make fun of them. A third kind of Jewish humor goes back to this idea that Jews are people of the book. It's a certain kind of Jewish comedy is a witty, bookish kind of humor. It is very intellectual, practiced by the elites who had facility with texts. The fourth kind of Jewish comedy can be of the body. Jews have bodies just like everybody else. They can have a vulgar comedy as well. That is Mel Brooks. And the other kind might be the comedy of Woody Allen, although his neurasthenic jokes about himself are also very much of the body. So you have those two different kinds, the wit and the bodily humor. Our fifth kind of Jewish comedy is about metaphysics. Jews have flourished and suffered and lived through thousands of years of diaspora due to their self-identification of themselves as a people with a relationship with God, even if it's a God that they don't believe in, don't trust, that they're angry at, all of those kinds of things. Someone like Tevye the dairyman in Shalom Aleichem stories, who is schlepping through the shtetl and talking with God and arguing with him. You look at the world, at God and Jewish history, and you put that all together. That kind of Jewish comedy is metaphysical and is pervasive. The sixth kind of Jewish comedy, the Jewish folktale. This is the Jewish people as a people who have their culture, their folklore, their own kinds of stories, and how it applies to us today as it did to ancestors thousands of years ago.
Jeremy, is Jewish humor unique?
Yes and no. It's unique because it has the details of Jewish history and culture and experience. That's what makes it Jewish humor. But it's not unique in those categories that I just described. It could be applied to other groups of people as well. Jews have an extremely long and quite varied set of experiences to draw on because of their diasporic nature over different continents, over many different historical eras.
In your book, you reference biblical stories as a source of Jewish humor. When I think about Jewish comedy, it's secular and not an Orthodox one. I've never seen an Orthodox Jew in a comedic film or stand-up club. It's exclusively secular. Years ago, I read aloud to my son Chaim Podok's novel, My Name is Esher Lev. And in that book, it's about an Orthodox boy who wants to be an artist and that requires him to learn about the non-Jewish world. In the plot, Asher paints a spectacular work of his father on a cross. It stuns his father and upsets him, and it gets Asher tossed from the congregation. Humor often depends on pushing the edge of social norms, and that might be pretty limiting for the Orthodox.
It really gets to two different phenomena that are linked. The first is the role that comedy plays in religious society. There's a great deal of humor in traditionally religious Judaism. It can be blasphemous. It can be obscene. In my class, I teach on 17th century Purim play, and they discuss the genitalia of the patriarchs of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So this is rough stuff within a religious context, but it was done within this Purim, this festival framework. Today, there are many kind of religious comedians, and they work within the frameworks of their society, as we all do within ours. Even the contemporary comedy clubs, there are certain things that you can do and can't do. The secular American Jewish experience define themselves in contradistinction to a traditional Orthodox religious experience, and they do that in comedy. One way of doing this is to create a narrative that traditional religion just is not funny. It's very serious, and our narrative of liberation allows us to embrace humor that they just don't get the joke. But I don't think that it's historically accurate.
In preparation for my son's bar mitzvah, a group of kids met with our rabbi to discuss how to prepare the biblical interpretation speech that is given by each bar mitzvah child after his Hebrew reading of the Torah. My son asked the rabbi, is it appropriate to use humor in the speech? And the rabbi said that humor is core to the Jewish experience, and he tries to employ humor in every sermon. It is proper and encouraged to use humor in interpreting the Bible, he said, but be respectful.
Let me just say that I applaud your son's impulse to bring humor in, and particularly around the Bible. There's a lot of different humor in the Bible, a lot of different comedies. One way of being respectful, I'm not saying this is the way that your son's rabbi meant it, but one way is to take that humor seriously. You could say that Eddie Murphy or Lenny Bruce took his humor very seriously. Sometimes the humor is a mocking humor of Jewish superiority, saying we've got God on our side. We may find that discomforting, but that's not to say it's not comedy.
Well, I think what the rabbi meant was that it would be inappropriate to do a fart joke or a vulgar skit like Sarah Silverman or physical comedy like Chevy Chase and Fall Over the Bima. That would have been off limits.
Yeah.
Now, if he wanted to use witty intellectual humor related to his specific Torah portion, now that would have been perfectly fine.
Every place has its own sociological rules. Your synagogue has one set of rules, and an Orthodox shtiebel will have a different set of rules.
Jews are only 2% of the U.S. population, yet they dominate the comedic world. Jon Stewart, when he got an Emmy for comedic writing, said, for those critics who said, how could you possibly put together a team of comedic writers with only 8 out of 9 writers being Jewish? And then he lifts up the trophy. We showed them.
That's great.
So why is there such overrepresentation of Jewish comics?
Jews were discriminated against, couldn't get into a number of professions. Mass entertainment was not prestigious as it is today. This was a possibility of making a living. I just wrote a history of comic books. And one of the reasons that Jews are so omnipresent in the early days of comic books is because it was a crap medium, comic books, so they could get in. Then you have network effects. My cousin needs a job. He's kind of funny. Let's bring him in. For a lot of the 20th century, there is a very rational explanation for why Jews are so overrepresented. And I think it's this combination of social discrimination and network effects.
In the Jewish culture, there are just a few fields that your mother will find acceptable as an occupation. There's law, medicine, finance, real estate, accounting and tax, retail, and comedy. So if your grades aren't great and you got trouble waking up in the morning, comedy sounds like a really good opportunity.
I think part of the question was, it was legitimate and for whom? Even within Jewishness, we have people saying, I am working 16 hours a day because I want my son to be a doctor or a lawyer. I don't want him to go off and be in show business. And then that status changed. You know, my son, the podcaster, right?
Yeah, I don't know. The pay isn't that good.
As this became higher status, it became more of an aspirational Jewish practice rather than practical. For a long time, it was either people who were familially in show business or, you know, this was the job that they could get as the decades went on and it became more socially acceptable.
Let's move on to intellectual comedy, and you use Woody Allen as the example. I grant your point that it sounds intellectual, but I think it's more of sham intellectualism. It sounds smart, but it's funny because it's idiotic or it's just simply nonsense.
That is a great and incisive observation that you're making about it, Woody Allen. He was so influenced by Mike Nichols and Elaine May, who had that same kind of faux thing. Allen said, I'm not an intellectual. And everyone insisted on taking him as an intellectual. So I think you're absolutely right about that. And that was the beauty of Woody Allen or Mike Nichols and Elaine May, parody in a certain kind of way that has that kind of faux wit. Woody Allen in his New Yorker pieces, for example, the private detective parody of God is dead and we have to find out who did it kind of thing.
Jerry Seinfeld wrote an article about how he writes, edits, and improves his comedy, and that his work is a craft. What do you think of Jewish comedic craftsmanship?
That's a really wonderful question about craftsmanship. A technical dedication is something that really can play across a wide spectrum of comedy. It can take as much craft to set up a really good fart joke as it can to do a really polished, witty, elusive one-liner. But in either case, you have this spectrum of attention and care that different comedians put into these things. I really cherish the hard work and awed at the genius off the cuff, out of nowhere, and its incongruity and shockingness can knock you off your feet. There's benefits to both approaches.
Don Rickles is a perfect example of a comic who can insult with machine gun accuracy, and you're laughing 3 jokes back.
I love Rickles. He has such a connection with his audience. He's famous for it, insult comics, creating this communication where he knows the people which are going to be okay with being insulted. He knows how far to take it.
Sometimes you take the joke too far and the comic gets hit in the face. I guess Chris Rock didn't know his audience.
Yeah. The circumstances around the slap, as this has become known, I think are not 100% clear to me, but comedy norms change all the time. And one thing that would have been entirely fine 100 years ago, for example, is making fun of people with a medical condition. If this had been an unfortunate hairstyle choice, that would have been one thing, but it was because Jada Pinkett Smith has this alopecia. We now say we shouldn't be making fun of people with medical conditions. Whether that deserves a kind of physically violent response is another question. One of the things that I teach is a Yiddish play from the late 19th century in my comedy class. It makes fun of people with stutters. Isn't that funny? Now, it is actually kind of gross to have that.
Some Jewish comics get nose jobs. Others change their names to sound less Jewish. My own great-grandfather changed his name from Holominsky to Bernstein to sound less Jewish. Is that still necessary to hide your Jewishness? Jackie Mason seems to flaunt it. Jew or not a Jew?
That depends. Again, it's changing times and circumstances. Jackie Mason had a hugely successful career on Broadway for going Jewish. Chicken Soup was getting complaints of being too Jewish. After Seinfeld, there's more depictions of Jews on television.
In the Dick Van Dyke Show, Carl Reiner was the creator and originally played the Dick Van Dyke character in the pilot, but he was perceived to be too Jewish. George Costanza's name was changed to sound not Jewish, but the character is all in.
There is no question that television and media are much more comfortable in 2022 with a much wider depiction of demography, ethnicity, and identity. Seinfeld is now 35 years ago, as hard as that is to believe that it premieres. 1989 is much closer to 1955 than it felt like at the time.
Let's talk about Jewish comedy and metaphysics. This is the concept of the relationship of the individual and God. And in the Bible, Jewish characters talk with God seemingly all the time. Abraham has an active conversation with God over killing Isaac. Moses attempts to weasel out of going back to Egypt. Oh God, please send my brother instead. And Job gets angry with God over his mistreatment. But in Fiddler on the Roof, David's conversation is one way, talking to God with no response, and that allows the use of humor because God gets to play the straight man, sort of like the gag prosecutor in the Woody Allen movie Bananas.
The first instance of laughter in Jewish literature where Sarah laughs, ironically, because she thinks she's not going to have a kid because she's postmenopausal. But God says, that's not funny. You don't understand the way that things work because I'm God and I can do whatever I want. And Sarah then transforms her laughter into a laughter of acknowledgement. It uses irony. Tevye, as you say, does not have the privilege of God responding to him. The conversation that he's having is kind of with himself. He is amusing himself, comforting himself. Maybe he's also kind of explaining the world and providing himself with some solace. It's doing something very serious, helping him make sense of the tragedies that befall him in his life. And he's had a lot of tragedies. There are really parallels between the two, where you have this humor in the text, but it's being used for really a deep purpose. And that's why I sort of juxtapose them in certain ways in my writing.
It's like a modern soliloquy strategy that allows Tevye to speak directly to the audience about what's on his mind without being compared to Hamlet. All right, new topic. Another aspect of Jewish comedic craftsmanship where the generic joke provides a structure for embellishment and personalization. And I'm thinking about the Aristocrats joke, where you have a structure that allows for creativity by the joke teller.
One of the things about the Aristocrats, which makes it such a good example, is that it is a scaffolding which is ethnically, religiously, culturally neutral, and you can put in whatever you want into it. The Aristocrats itself is not an inherently Jewish joke, but you can make it into a Jewish joke. And that's very frequently the case with a lot of entertainment genres. A romantic comedy isn't necessarily Jewish, but you can certainly make it Jewish. You can make anything Jewish. It doesn't necessarily mean that it is.
Jewish humor tries to push the edge of what's sociologically tolerated. Mel Brooks in The Producers is poking fun with the musical number Springtime for Hitler, and Seinfeld has an episode where Jerry makes out with a girl during a screening of Schindler's List. Do Jewish comedians excel at testing boundaries?
There are definitely some Jewish comedians whose Jewish comedy pushes the edge. There are others who are very comfortable doing some of the nightclub acts at the Copa or something like that. When Larry David came back to write the series finale of Seinfeld, they get thrown in jail because they are monsters. People didn't like that because they had affection for the characters. But David and of Seinfeld really do push the edge, and they show where society isn't quite comfortable.
Next topic is Norman Lear. The Jewish archetypal comedy, All in the Family, and the audience's response to Archie.
That's a great question because it gets ultimately to that dynamic between artist and audience. Lear is sort of a self-identified liberal, felt that the Bunker character was someone who was not to be admired, not a hero. And the reason for All in the Family's remarkable success was that people identified with Bunker. They thought he was great. I consider Lear to be a great artist, who is like a thief with the hole in his pocket. He leaves more than he carries away. That he couldn't help but make these characters so human that people did identify with them, even if that wasn't Lear's ideological or political intent.
How is Andy Kaufman's comedic style different from other Jewish comics?
Kaufman is an exception to every rule. We've been talking about comedy as creating a communication with your audience and trying to have a positive response from your audience. Kaufman was often interested in bewildering his audience, sometimes even enraging them. He was a genius and was able to make his own space in that way.
I end each episode on a note of optimism. Jeremy, what are you optimistic about, specifically about Jewish comedy?
We have these new kinds of media for more voice and new jokes than we ever could have before. There are more platforms to hear more funny things. That millions and millions of people would have been interested in series about ultra-Orthodox Jews on Netflix. A couple of years ago, I would have said, I'm not sure of that, but the success of Shtissel, which has its comedic elements, show that there are audiences for Jewish comedy.